A terrible thought popped into my head, and I vocalized it before I had a chance to think it through. Is that why you went out with Chief Lincoln? Because you think Nick is into me? Cassie's lips pursed together. No? I cocked my head at her, unsure if she was telling me the truth. But before I could drill down further into the conversation, a bell rang from over my shoulder. New customers had arrived. Cassie pushed up from her desk and followed me out to the front. The silence between us palpable. She gave Nick a thin-lipped smile when she reached the front, but didn't offer a greeting before jumping in to help the trio of high school girls at the counter, giggling and laughing together. I noted that in between every rapid-fire sentence, they'd collectively glance over at Nick. I rolled my eyes as I tugged my apron off over my head and placed it back on its peg.
Ready? Nick asked.
Absolutely, I replied, shooting one last glance back at Cassie before following him to the door.
Bye, Cassie,
he called, his tone a little unsteady. She waved, but didn't look over at us.
She okay?
Nick asked, pushing the door open. Yeah, I replied, frowning at my friend. Just overworked. Come on, let's get out of here. We left Siren Song and went to Nick's silver sedan that was parked out front. I pulled the door open and smiled at Nick over the top of the car. Are we allowed to drink on the job? He laughed and nodded before dropping into the driver's seat.
James Bond, remember?
Excellent. Chapter 16. Lou's Whiskey Well was only a 10-minute drive from Siren Song, just on the edge of town. The drive was similar to our trip the night before out to Bobby Price's rental home, but instead of turning right at a four-way intersection, Nick turned left. The tavern was up the road on the right, wedged in between a Mexican restaurant and an office supply shop. From the parking lot, the tavern didn't exactly look like a desirable destination. Judging by the rundown appearance of the outside of the building, half of the bulbs in the neon sign above the front doors were burnt out, making it appear as low-key wee in fluorescent green and blue. The rest of the building was nondescript. There were no windows along the front, just a pair of heavy wooden doors to mark the entrance. A few sad-looking potted plants were scattered haphazardly along the sidewalk, along with a couple of short cement poles topped with overflowing ashtrays. Kind of a dive, Nick said under his breath as we walked to the front of the building. I stayed close to his side. The place exuded a vibe that made me not want to wander too far off on my own. I nodded, but my mind was busy trying to reconcile the ghost version of Katerina with the place before me. The two didn't seem to match up. Katerina was a small, willowy girl with big innocent eyes and a look of helplessness about her. Although she was actually 24 years old, she barely looked legal to be inside a bar, let alone work in one. It was hard to imagine her serving drinks in this dingy place that looked like it might be full of burly bikers. Even more concerning was what Bobby had told us about her penchant to wear short skirts, drink a little too much, and get tangled up with the wrong people. Katerina, what happened to you? Nick opened the door and ushered me inside, but I noticed he stayed close. The inside of the tavern was just as run down as the exterior. A loud, pulsing beat filled the air, some kind of hard rock song with indiscernible lyrics. I wanted to press my hands over my ears. Booths circled the room, and a long bar stretched the length of the far wall. Neon lights glowed beneath countless bottles of liquor, making them look like prizes on a sweepstakes show. Most of the patrons gathered around three pool tables off to the right, in a separate room that was partially visible to the main bar area through a wide arched doorway. A few couples were sprinkled throughout, seated in different booths, and they all glanced our way as Nick and I shuffled into the room. We were clearly not the ordinary clientele. Nick threw his shoulders back, infusing his posture with confidence, and picked up the pace as we neared the bar. A hulking man, who almost looked like he could be Bobby Price's brother or cousin, was hunched over a beer tap, working to refill a tray loaded with empty pint glasses. He didn't look up as we approached the bar, Instead, he bellowed,
Jess! Customers!
A swinging door flew open, and a sultry-looking girl who was probably 10 years Katerina Sr. sauntered out to greet us. Her lips were painted cherry red, and her eyes were ringed with thick black liner. Her brunette hair swirled around her shoulders in soft curls as she hustled over to us. She was wearing a top cut so low that I was blushing.
Howdy,
she said, without a trace of a southern accent.
What can I get you two?
It's buy one, get one on pints all night long if you're interested.
Nick glanced over at me, and I gave a small shake of my head. Any thoughts of drinking had flown out the window as soon as we'd entered the establishment. I didn't trust that their glasses would even be clean.
I'll take a pint of whatever you recommend, he said, flashing the bartender an easy smile.
She smiled up at him, her eyes sparkling like a cat that just spotted a slow-moving mouse.
You got it, handsome. Anything for you, miss?
Miss? He's handsome and I'm miss? Clearly Nick was going to have to do the talking if we were going to get anywhere with Jess. I gave her a thin-lipped smile and shook my head. No, thank you. She shrugged and scurried off to the far end of the bar to pull Nick a pint of pale beer from one of the taps that the large man wasn't working at. I cringed as she shook her hips on her way, worrying that her microscopic shorts were going to ride up another inch and turn the bar into an entirely different kind of establishment. Was that what Katerina used to wear to work, too? No wonder Bobby had taken issue with it. Nick fished out his wallet and dropped a 20 on the bar. I raised an eyebrow at him, and he gave me a crooked smile.
Lesson number one, always overpay. Tends to grease the wheels a little.
That's why you're the brains of the operation, I teased.
Nick chuckled and hopped up onto a bar stool and gestured for me to follow suit. The stools were covered in vinyl, though most of them had patches where the material was peeling away. I perched on the edge of mine, keeping the tips of my toes on the ground, and glanced around the dimly lit room. No one was staring at us now, and they'd all gone back to their own conversations. Loud cheers erupted from the side room, and Nick and I swiveled to glance over. One man was holding his pool cue up in the air, pumping his arms victoriously. Two other men were disgruntled and bickering amongst themselves.
Now I've gotta ask, what brings you two in tonight? You're not from around here, are you?
Jess asked, her voice a seductive purr as she slid Nick's beer over to him. She spotted the 20, and her eyes gleamed before she snapped it up from the bar in a blink-and-you'll-miss-it grab. Nick wrapped a hand around the glass, but didn't make a move to drink it. I hid a smile, realizing he was just as sketched out by the cleanliness factor as I was, and had only ordered something to get Jess talking.
Actually, we're here to talk to you.
Me?
Her flirtatious smile faltered. She folded her arms as she glanced from me to Nick.
What for?
It's about Katerina,
Nick said, getting right to the point. Jess stopped cold, her arms sliding down her body as though she'd lost the strength to keep them pinned against her chest. She obviously already knew that Katerina was no longer alive. Nick glanced down at his hands on the bar.
I take it you heard what happened.
Jess nodded slowly.
She hadn't been home for 2 days. I kept calling and calling, but it was going to her voicemail. I knew something was wrong. So yesterday I called her mother. I'd never spoken to the woman before, but her number was inside one of Katerina's notebooks. She didn't even know that Katerina worked here. Kat knew her mom wouldn't approve, so she told her she worked at the donut shop in the next town over. Anyway, I introduced myself as one of Kat's friends, and she just lost it. She told me that her baby was...
Jess stopped, her voice too thick to continue speaking. She pressed her eyes closed and shook her head softly.
It's just so awful. We're so sorry for your loss, I whispered.
Jess nodded and swiped at each eye, wiping away the tears gathering at the edges.
From what we've been told, the two of you were quite close. We were wondering if you could tell us anything about her.
Are you cops?
Jess asked. Nick shook his head.
I'm a PI, She looked at me.
And you?
Cop? I frowned. No.
I didn't know how else to explain my interest in the case, so I left it at that.
A PI, huh?
She repeated, turning her attention back to Nick.
Who hired you?
Katerina's mother hired me, when she thought that Katerina was missing. As you probably know, the two of them had been having some trouble communicating, and had fallen out of touch.
Jess leaned forward and braced herself against the bar, her palms flat on the sticky-looking surface. She stared down at the grains in the wood for a long moment, before sighing deeply and pushing herself back upright.
Pearl didn't approve of Katerina and Bobby's relationship. When they broke up a couple of weeks ago, Katerina didn't want to tell her mother, out of fear that she'd get the whole told-you-so thing. She didn't want to hear it while she was still grieving the end of the relationship. So she put a little space in between them. It was never meant to be permanent.
Jess sniffled and wiped under each eye again, blinking frantically to get herself back under control.
And what did you think about Bobby and Katerina?
Nick asked. The tears in Jess's eyes were suddenly ignited by a flicker of rage.
He's evil. He was always bossing Katerina around, telling her what to wear, who she could and couldn't talk to. And most nights, when she was working the bar, he'd come down here to check up on her. He was a total control freak and would berate her in the middle of her shift, with customers watching and listening to everything he said. He'd call her names and make her cry. And then Lou would send her home early for causing a scene, and she'd miss out on tip money. That's all we get around here, tips. And Bobby was costing her almost all of them with his constant circus.
Wow. I shook my head slowly. Poor Katerina. No wonder she'd blocked out the memories of her ex-boyfriend.
He was a nightmare.
Jess clenched her teeth together.
The last time he came in here was almost 3 weeks ago. Bobby stormed in here and threw a huge fit. Lou tried to get him to leave, and the two of them got into a fight.
Nick glanced over to where Lou was standing at the beer tap, getting refills for a cluster of patrons at the opposite end of the long bar. He was a beefy guy. I wasn't sure who would have the upper hand when it came to a fight between him and Bobby. Lou had quite a few more years and pounds on him, but still it would have been close.
Lou had him pinned against the bar and was screaming at him to leave and never come back. Katerina was terrified, crying under the bar. Bobby got a hold of a beer bottle, smashed it on the counter, and then threatened to cut Lou with it. Lou pushed him off and Bobby threw it onto the floor before leaving.
Nick cursed under his breath, and Jess nodded sadly.
It was a mess. Right before he left, he told Katerina that she better not even bother coming home.
I gasped.
Whoa. So, after the bar closed, Lou called up some buddies and they all went to Bobby's house and packed up Katerina's stuff and she came to stay with me.
Nick nodded.
Smart.
And yet, she'd still ended up murdered. My heart plummeted to my stomach, beating frantically. It was all so tragic.
Did Bobby ever come back to the bar after that?
Nick asked. Jess shook her head.
No. Lou hired a security guard and took out a restraining order. He told Katerina that she should do the same.
She didn't? I asked.
No.
Jess worked her jaw as though the thought of it still irritated her.
I kept trying to get her to go to the police. I offered to go with her. She always refused.
Any idea why?
Nick asked. Jess drew in a long, shaky breath, as though fighting to get herself back under control.
I think she missed him. He was her high school boyfriend, maybe even longer than that, I can't remember. In any case, they were together for years and years. He was all she knew.
Nick gave a solemn nod.
Do you think that Bobby would hurt her? Physically, I mean?
Jess paused. Her expression crumpled again. In a tiny, quiet voice, she finally said,
"She told me that he never hit her, and I never saw bruises on her. But there are obviously ways of damaging a person without hitting them."
Nick reached across the bar and squeezed Jess's hand.
I'm so sorry that you lost your friend, Jess. Truly. I can only offer a glimmer of hope in that the BHPD and myself are doing everything we can to find whoever did this to her and bring them to justice. I nodded, silently adding my promise. Jess's eyes filled with tears again, and it was obvious that she couldn't speak. She shook her head and hurried from the bar area, back through the same swinging door that must have led to a kitchen or a storage room. Neither of us said a word.
Chapter 17. Once Jess had excused herself, Lou, the large bartender, lumbered over.
"What'd you say to her?"
he asked, glaring at Nick and me.
"I'm sorry, it wasn't our intent to upset her, but we were asking her about Katerina."
"You cops?"
he asked, his eyes shifting between us.
"No, sir."
Nick extended his hand across the bar.
"Name's Nick. I'm a PI. And although I cooperate with police efforts, I was independently hired to look into this case."
"Hmm,"
he grunted, briefly shaking Nick's offered hand.
"Well, I'm sure none of us here know what happened to that poor girl. But if you're looking for leads, you should check out that ex-boyfriend of hers. He's a real hothead."
Nick nodded.
"Yes, we spoke with him yesterday."
I leaned forward, capturing Lou's attention. "Lou, is there anyone else that might have been a threat to Katerina?" Lou shook his head.
"Not that I can think of. You might ask Sully. He's a retired army guy I recently hired to work security."
Nick glanced around. "Is he here tonight?" Lou nodded.
"He's in the back, watching the cameras. I don't put him on the door unless we're really busy."
It was hard to imagine that Lou's was ever a hopping place, but I kept my opinion to myself. Could we speak with him?
"Sure, I'll go get him. But you ask me, you're wasting your time. The cops should be rounding up Bobby and hauling him away for good. A lifetime in a box would only scratch the surface of what he really deserves for the things he said to that poor girl. But it'd be a start."
Lou wandered off to the back room, and Nick and I sagged against the bar, taking a collective sigh. Nick glanced at me and dropped his arms down on the bar top.
"Sounds like our initial impression of Bobby was right on the money."
"I wish it wasn't. Poor Katerina." Nick nodded and pushed his pint out of the way. The foam on top was melted, and judging by the lack of condensation on the outside, it hadn't been all that cold to begin with.
"There's just one thing that doesn't add up."
"The hiking thing?"
"Yeah. I mean, they weren't together anymore, so what would they have been doing hiking along the coast?"
I shrugged. "Maybe he promised to change." Nick snorted.
"Guys like that don't change."
"I'm not saying they do, but from what Jess said, Katerina wasn't truly over him. She might have jumped at the chance to meet up if he dangled a little bit of hope over her head." Nick frowned as he mulled it over.
"But then, was it premeditated? He wanted to get her alone so he could shove her off the side of the cliff? Or did he truly want her back and things got heated? Or was it just an accident?"
I tapped my fingers on the bar. I can't imagine that it was planned. From what Jess said, he's a reactionary guy. He fights when he gets riled. I don't think he would have planned to take her up there just to kill her. It makes more sense that they were talking and got into an argument. He's a lot bigger than her. It wouldn't have taken much for her to get pushed back. Maybe she lost her footing and then... I stopped, not wanting to say the rest out loud.
"But if it was truly an accident, then why didn't he come forward and call the police? There might have been a chance that the rescue team could have gotten there in time to save her life."
I arched a brow. Nick hadn't seen her body sprawled at the bottom of the cliffs. "I don't think there would have been a chance of that."
"Well, he didn't necessarily know that. Why just leave her like that?"
"Probably because he knew how it would look." Nick nodded.
"I just can't imagine someone being so cold, especially not to someone they'd shared their life with for so many years."
"I can't either." Our conversation came to a stop as the door opened again, and a tall, muscular man with a full beard, dark eyes, and rough features appeared. Lou followed in his wake and came over to our place at the bar.
"This is Sully. He's been here for a few weeks now." I need to see to my other customers, but for what it's worth, I hope you nail the guy who did this to Katerina.
Nick inclined his head at Lou as he went back to the other side of the bar and continued getting refills for the people gathered around the pool tables. Sully shook Nick's hand.
I don't know how much help I can be. Like Lou said, I haven't been here all that long, but I'll answer your questions as best I can.
Thank you, Nick replied.
Jess told us about the altercation between Lou and Bobby. Did you see anyone else around here that had an issue with Katerina? Anyone that stands out?
Sully glanced toward the broad back of his employer. Lou was far enough away that he couldn't possibly hear us, especially with the music, but Sully waited a beat longer before leaning in.
This stays off the record?
Of course. I held my breath. Sully licked his lips nervously. It rattled me to watch a man of his stature and background act so shaken.
I think Katerina and Jess were getting into trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Nick asked, his tone cool. Sully glanced around once more before inching in closer.
I think they were stealing from the till. I haven't caught them on camera, but I overheard a conversation where they were talking about splitting up their share of the loot. It was very hushed and gave me a bad feeling.
Nick and I exchanged a reproachful glance. Neither of us would want to start thinking badly of the sweet, pretty young woman. But if it could lead to the truth about what happened to her, it had to be done. The worst part was that if Katerina was stealing, Nick would have to turn over his findings to the police. And, even worse, explain the theft to Katerina's mother. How could you add to the misery of a family that was already in mourning? I, on the other hand, would have to go confront Ghost Katerina in order to get to the bottom of what had happened.
I could be way off, but I've been doing security and consulting for a long time, and I trust my instincts. And when it comes to those two, my gut told me something was going on.
Or might still be, Nick added under his breath.
Sully inclined his head, and then straightened, his shoulders automatically dropping back into a relaxed but ready stance of a soldier at ease.
I wish you luck on the investigation. I don't know how much longer I'll be here, but if you need me...
He paused to retrieve a glossy business card from his wallet.
You can reach me at this number.
Nick glanced at the card, and I sneaked a peek over his shoulder. According to the card, Sullivan Pope ran a private security company. But something about the card had a homemade, low-rent feel to it. As though he read my mind, Sully chuckled.
I'm just gigging it here because Lou's a family friend. I have some other security jobs lined up for the fall.
Nick and I each gave him a polite nod as we hopped up from our place at the bar, thanked Sully for his time and the information, and then made our way to the exit. Outside, the cool evening air breezed over my cheeks, mercifully clearing the scent of stale beer and bar food from my nostrils. I looked over to ask Nick for his thoughts, but stopped short. Jess was standing at the corner of the building, halfway concealed in the shadows, beyond the reach of the lights along the front of the bar. I nudged Nick, and he followed my stare. She wasn't alone. She was speaking to a man wearing dark clothing. The shadows concealed most of his face, but I caught a glimpse when he turned his head. He looked to be in his 30s and had a scruffy beard and angular features. Their conversation was too quiet to pick out, but based on their body language alone, neither of them appeared to be very happy. "Who is that?" I asked. Nick stared but shook his head.
"I can't tell, but it looks like the right height for the security guy."
I cocked my head. "Yes, that's who it was. Sully. But why was he chatting with Jess outside in the shadows? From what he told us, he certainly wasn't her friend."
"Come on, let's get out of here,"
Nick said, starting out into the parking lot again. I followed after him, but couldn't help craning my head around to look at the corner of the bar again before getting into the car. Jess and Sully were gone.
Chapter 18. Once inside Nick's car, I leaned back against the seat and rubbed my temples, attempting to fight off the subtle throb pulsing across my forehead.
I don't think I've ever been so confused. Nick turned, heading back into Beechwood Harbor.
I'll do some digging tomorrow, see what I can find out about Jess. I don't know how long she's been working at the bar, but I doubt she's been there all her life. If I can find out where she worked before, I can see if she's ever had legal trouble, or if her previous employers caught her stealing.
I nodded, but couldn't shake the feeling of disbelief over the entire thing. It's just hard to believe. Katerina seems like such a nice girl, a normal girl. I didn't peg her as a thief. Nick glanced over at me.
You met her?
My eyes went wide as dinner plates, and my heart crashed to the floorboards under my feet.
No, I didn't. I just meant, you know, from what everybody is saying about her.
Right. Nick sighed.
Just be thankful you don't have to go and report back to her heartsick mother.
I cringed. Do you have to tell her everything? Nick shrugged.
That's what she's paying me to do. She wants to know what happened to her daughter.
Well, I don't envy you that task, that's for sure. We were silent for the rest of the trip up the hill to where Beechwood Manor perched atop the bluff. Nick pulled up along the curb in front of the house and smiled.
It really is a beauty, he commented,
seemingly to himself. I unbuckled and turned to face him. Thanks for letting me go with you.
Anytime, Junior.
Junior?
He laughed. I'm trying out nicknames for you. You know, the best detective pairs always have catchy call signs.
I rolled my eyes but couldn't stop from laughing with him. First of all, we're not detectives, and secondly, I'm not your partner. Remember? Nick shrugged, his eyes still sparkling with amused delight.
I'll come up with something.
Good luck. I opened my door and stepped out, still smiling as Nick waved and drove away. Crazy man, I muttered to myself as I went up the front steps. As it turned out, the real craziness was unfolding on the other side of the front door. Before I could even take three steps inside, Posey and Katerina were flying at me, their expressions panicked. What in the other world?
She remembered,
Posey shouted, something that she never did, especially indoors. Katerina nodded frantically. My heart skittered through my chest. You remember who killed you?
No,
she replied, slightly crestfallen.
But I'm remembering who I am, or was.
I tried to mask my disappointment. I was happy that she was getting pieces of her memories back, but it would be much more helpful if she were able to identify her murderer. Okay, start at the beginning. We went into the formal sitting room and found Evangeline working her way through a tome on potion making. She had a stack of textbooks beside her and was clearly in the middle of studying. Why she didn't work in the silence of her room was beyond me. I wouldn't be able to get through one chapter if I plunked down in the middle of the ever-swirling chaos of the manor.
Posey and I were talking about hiking, and I don't know. It was like an explosion, and all of a sudden I could remember.
Posey nodded, grinning from ear to ear.
It was so exciting, dear. It's a shame you missed it.
Katerina didn't wait for my questions. She started rambling off random facts about her life as though she was filling out paperwork at the doctor's office.
I'm 24. My mother's name is Pearl. My father's name is Ron, but he left when I was in kindergarten. I don't have any siblings, but I have a cousin, Paisley, and she's like a sister. I work at a bar. I hate it, but I make good money.
I frowned, finding it hard to imagine that she made much at the bar. Do you remember Jess? Your friend? You worked together. Katerina paused from sharing her list of facts and tapped her lips as she thought.
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay. I hesitated, shifting my weight between my feet, wondering how to ask the next question.
I remember Bobby now, too,
Katerina added, her tone dropping down an octave from elation. Her smile faltered, and she stared off into space as though watching a movie inside of her head. All at once, she snapped out of it and her eyes locked with mine.
I thought I was going to marry him someday.
I nibbled on my lower lip, unsure of how to respond. It didn't seem right to rag on the man when I really didn't know that much about him, though the stories of his temper were enough for me to pass judgment. Katerina, do you remember a fight at the bar, right before you and Bobby broke up? She pursed her lips, obviously still hung up on thoughts of Bobby.
Which one? There were always fights, usually over pool games.
This one was different. Katerina, I really need you to remember. Bobby fought with Lou, your boss. Katerina screwed up her face in a look of concentration, but released it half a minute later with a frustrated groan.
I don't know. Some memories are really clear and others are sort of foggy.
What about the day of the hike? Who was with you? Can you see the man's face now? Katerina slowly shook her head.
It's not all clear yet. I'm sorry.
I raked a hand through my hair, combing the large sections back out of my face. Posey, what if we went back to the cliff? Do you think that would jog the memory? Posey sighed.
I don't know, dear. Gwen knows more about ghost matters than I do.
It went unsaid that this was mostly due to the fact that she rarely left the manor.
Can't you, I don't know, cast some sort of reverse memory charm?
Evangeline offered from her place at the end of one of the large couches. Posey shook her head.
That won't work. That much I do know.
So, we're back at the beginning. I couldn't risk tainting Katerina's memory, or overwhelming her with too much information. If pushed too far, she could lose what little she'd recovered. It would serve my purposes, but I couldn't have it on my conscience to turn Katerina into an aimless, wandering spirit with no memory of her old life. It wouldn't be right. No, there had to be another way. I spun on my heels and faced Katerina. My heart sank at her solemn expression. Her pain was evident in the lines etched in her semi-transparent face. Katerina, we'll figure this out. Nick is making progress every day. I'm sorry for putting so much pressure on you. She nodded, but her expression remained vacant and far away, as though she was only hearing half of what I'd said. I tore my eyes away from the distraught ghost, and they landed on Evangeline, who had gone back to studying. Something tugged and twisted up inside my gut, but I ignored it and turned my attention back to the problem at hand. Posey crossed the sitting room and comforted Katerina in hushed tones. I suddenly felt out of place. I'm going to go work on some potions, I said to no one in particular. A general rumble of acknowledgement went through the room, but no one glanced my way. I made my way to the kitchen, thankfully finding it uninhabited, and went to work on making a batch of Permasmile Draft, a specialty potion that I brewed for one of my newest customers, a local telepath who had heard about my services through the supernatural grapevine. She was newly married, and her in-laws had recently moved in with her and her husband. She needed a weekly supply of the draft to keep a smile on her face in the midst of her mother-in-law's, or monster-in-law's, as she called her, constant onslaught of nasty thoughts, which she had the misfortune of being able to hear. Not to mention the things the evil woman dared to speak out loud. It was a simple enough potion, but it took me twice as long as it should have because my mind kept wandering through a revolving list of possible solutions to retrieving Katerina's memories. Sure, the case could be cracked without them, but just like finding her body, it would be infinitely easier if I knew what I was looking for. I shuddered to think what would have happened if I hadn't met Katerina on the beach that afternoon. Eventually, she would have realized she was a ghost, but Nick would probably still be tracking down leads, believing she was alive and just temporarily missing. I paused in my work and wondered how many other ghosts were out there wandering around aimlessly while their families didn't even know they were dead. To me, it seemed like something the SPA should have handled. Sure, it would be a logistical nightmare, but why couldn't they organize some kind of specialty branch that would be solely responsible for locating wandering ghosts? How could they ever pass into the other world with so much left unresolved? Is that what would happen once the case was solved? Would Katerina be able to leave this world and go to the next? I hoped so.
She didn't seem all that cut out for being a long-term ghost. She wasn't like Gwen, or Posey. But then again, they'd been dead for decades, not just a handful of days. Maybe she'd adjust? Once the permasmile draft was bottled, the kettle cleaned, and the counters spotless, I decided that a long soak in the tub would be a remedy for the day's anxiety. I went to my room, gathered up my pajamas, and then wandered down the hall to my personal bathroom. I cranked on the tap to full blast and breathed deeply as the steam filled the small room. I undressed quickly and waited for the tub to fill up. As I tied my hair back, I caught a glimmer of a sparkle in the mirror. The larkspur necklace hung flat against my chest. It had caught the light just at the right angle to sparkle, and the gleam lit a bulb inside my mind. Surely, if there was one person I could count on to help me get answers, it would be Grandmother Honeysuckle. With no disrespect to Posey or Gwen, my great-grandmother Honeysuckle was much older and had 7+ generations worth of knowledge swimming around in her permanently preserved mind. That is, if I could find a way to get her to unlock it. It took a certain level of finesse to get Grandmother Honeysuckle tracking with me. I usually avoided asking her for help, but lately she'd been proving more valuable than ever. The larkspur was meant to enhance my magical capabilities, but also gave me the fringe benefit of having a library's worth of magical knowledge around my neck at all times, in the form of my long-since-passed grandmother. I wrapped myself in a cotton towel and kept an eye on the bath water to make sure it wasn't close to overflowing. The magic that opened a channel of communication between me and Honeysuckle didn't hold for long. By the time we were disconnected, the tub would be ready for me. The larkspur was made of rose gold, and although it was hundreds of years old, it didn't have a single scratch, dent, or imperfection on its smooth surface. I ran my finger over the gold locket and then dug my nail into the small latch on the side. The locket opened slowly, and a silvery fog began to clear from the mirrored surface. I plastered a smile on my face, likely looking like I'd doused myself with some of the permasmile draft, and waited for Grandmother Honeysuckle to appear. But she didn't. The glass remained foggy. I scrubbed at it with my thumb, but nothing changed. "Grandmother Honeysuckle?" I said, leaning closer to the necklace as though it were a cell phone with a microphone embedded somewhere. "What, you off playing bingo?" I sighed. "Weeble?" Weeble was Honeysuckle's rambunctious little lapdog, turned immortal familiar, as his spirit had joined hers in the locket. He couldn't talk, thank the stars, but I tried anyways. Still, nothing. "Fine, I'll try again later." My bath was about ready anyway. I set the locket on the side of the counter and went to toss a few handfuls of bath salt into the steaming water.
"Who's there? Show yourself!"
I jolted at the barking voice and spun around so fast that my towel dropped and the entire apothecary jar of rosehip oil-infused bath salt tipped into the water, creating a cloud of perfume around me.
"I'll put a hex on you and your whole family for disturbing me."
I lunged forward and snagged the necklace by the cord. "Grandmother, it's me, Holly!" She screamed. I realized my towel was still pooled around my feet. I yelped, grabbed for the towel, and sent a second bottle of bath salt over the edge of the tub. "Bat wings," I growled, wrapping the towel around me. I sat down on the edge of the tub and retrieved the necklace from the floor. "Sorry, Grandmother."
"Who are you? And why are you indecent?"
I sighed and sat on the edge of the tub. "It's Holly Bolt, your great-granddaughter, 7 generations down." Every time Grandmother Honeysuckle and I spoke, we had to have the same get-to-know-you chat, even though I was fairly certain I was the only one who could access her preserved form. "I was about to get into the tub. I apologize for the eyeful," I added, my cheeks blushing to what I'm certain was a lovely shade of crimson.
"Holly?"
she repeated, arching her brow at me. A small yap sounded in the background, and I barely resisted the urge to roll my eyes. I was already running out of time. I didn't need that little puff of fur distracting her, when I hadn't even managed to get to the part where she remembered who I was. "Grandmother Honeysuckle, please, I need your help." She frowned.
"That much is obvious, Harlow. You're a mess."
"Holly," I muttered. "And thanks."
"Anytime, dear. I am half mirror, you know. It's my job to inform you on the state of your appearance."
"Fantastic. Maybe I'll call back for fashion advice."
"I'd start with putting on some clothes," she interjected.
My fingernails scratched the side of the porcelain tub. The sound made me wince. "Right. Noted. Now, about my question."
"Holly! Oh, now I remember."
She smiled widely and leaned in conspiratorially toward me.
"You're looking for a young wizard to settle down with."
Why had I thought this was a good idea? "Not right now, Grandmother." She pursed her thin lips at me.
"Why not?"
"Might as well get it out of the way. Because I'm already seeing someone." Grandmother Honeysuckle's eyes lit up like two fireflies.
"Oh, tell me everything, dear. You've been holding out on me."
2 seconds ago, she didn't even know who I was, and now I'm holding out on her? Right.
"Is he a nice wizard?"
Honeysuckle pressed, oblivious to my dismay. "Grandmother Honeysuckle, we don't have a lot of time. I need to ask you about ghost memories."
"Ghost memories?"
"Yes. I recently met a ghost. She was murdered, and I'm trying to help figure out how and by whom. But it's difficult since she's a brand new ghost and can't remember everything. Posey, my landlord, is a ghost too, and she's warned me not to push Katerina too far. She said it would scramble her memories forever. But if there's a murderer loose, I need to know who it is. I'm afraid we don't have time for her memories to come back naturally, if they do at all. Do you have any advice?" Grandmother Honeysuckle looked crestfallen that we were no longer discussing my love life, but the expression passed quickly, and she locked in on the new topic with renewed interest. Weeble yapped in the background, and she shushed him as she thought.
"All of the ghosts I've ever met were well into their afterlife and could talk endlessly about their past life. And I do mean endlessly, dear. After all, where were they in a hurry to go to? They were already dead."
Her tone wasn't callous, but I flinched anyways.
"Oh, Holly, you know what I mean."
I nodded, hoping to speed the conversation along. The edges of Honeysuckle's animated portrait were beginning to fade, taking on the foggy appearance the mirror always had when first accessed. Besides that, my bath was nearly full. "So no ideas on getting her memories back?"
"There was a man, a warlock, that knew how to heal ghosts. Some kind of..."
"Ghost doctor?" I said, wondering if it was the same one that Posey had mentioned.
"Precisely. He was able to meld minds with ghosts and pull the memories directly. He had quite a thriving practice in my day. Apparently there are a number of ghosts with this problem."
"How did he meld minds?" I reached over and shut off the tap. The bathroom was filled with steam and perfume from the blended bath salts. Somehow, besides the magical fog at the edges, the small mirror wasn't affected by steam.
"I believe it was some kind of..."
Her image flickered.
"Oh, dear, it looks like it's time for me to go. I really should have set a longer time constriction on this spell."
"Coulda, woulda, shoulda." "Some kind of what?" I cried, my tone high and frantic.
"Some kind of path connection."
Her words were garbled and broken. I leaned forward, straining to hear her voice as it faded. "Path connection?"
"Telepath,"
Honeysuckle repeated.
"Be a good girl, Holly, and find a nice young wizard, or an old one, whichever you..."
The image faded completely. Nothing but the fog left on the glass. I blew out a long breath and snapped the locket shut. Well, at least she didn't have a chance to find out about Adam, I muttered to myself. before stashing the necklace with my discarded clothes and sinking into the tub. If Honeysuckle knew I was dating a shifter, she probably would have found a way to propel herself right out of the locket to personally hex me. Chapter 19. After a long soak in the tub, my rumbling stomach won out over the desire to fall into bed and spend a week nestled beneath the covers, a plan that Boots would love, as long as we occasionally got up for tuna breaks, and I dragged myself to the kitchen. On my way, I peeked into the sitting room and noticed that it was unoccupied. I glanced up at the ceiling, figuring Posey and Katerina were in the attic. As for Evangeline, I wasn't sure. I still wanted to get to the bottom of whatever she was up to, but I had a murder to solve first. A pang of guilt went through me, thinking about the conversation with Posey and Katerina. The young girl had been so excited to see me when I got back to the manor, and I'd crushed her within 5 minutes. I groaned to myself. How was it that I kept managing to stick my foot in my mouth around her? I could only hope that she was feeling better now. From my brief and scattered conversation with Grandmother Honeysuckle, it appeared that I had a little homework to do regarding telepathic spells. It wasn't an area of magic that I'd dabbled in before, but if that's what it would take to get inside Katerina's head, then I would do what I could. Generally speaking, I didn't like to cast any kind of magic involving the mind. Some witches and wizards performed erasing spells on mortals and other supernaturals alike, even though they were against magical laws. I'd never considered casting such a spell. Not because of the legal ramifications, but because I didn't think it was right to enter someone else's mind. It was the ultimate violation, in my opinion. Taking or invading memories was too personal. Posey wouldn't like my proposal, but I didn't know what other choice we had. It wasn't like there were security cameras on the hiking trail. Without a witness or some physical evidence, the case could easily slip into the unsolved files and go cold forever. I couldn't let that happen, even if it meant doing a little mind magic. Besides, the only memory I would be accessing would be the worst and final memory of Katerina's life. Surely she wouldn't mind if something happened to damage or erase it. Still, it weighed on me. And as I'd soaked in the tub, every few minutes I changed my mind on whether it was a good idea or not. As I pushed into the kitchen, I was of the mindset that it wouldn't hurt to try. What else could we do? I reached for the light switch to the left of the door, and then froze. My hand hovered a whisper above the plate. Evangeline was standing off to the side of the stove, an orb of light showing at the tip of her wand like a pointed high-beam flashlight. And she was rummaging through my warded potion supply cabinet. "What in the other world do you think you're doing?" I growled, smashing my palm against the switch to throw light over the entire space. Evangeline whirled around, her beam of light hitting me in the eyes. I squeezed my eyes closed against the harsh light. "Turn it off!" The light went out with a small popping sound. "Polly, I'm so sorry, I was just, stealing from me?" I narrowed my eyes on hers. Magic pooled in the palm of my right hand, and I raised it so she could see it right at the tips of my fingers. She had a wand, but I knew that I could cast faster than she could. She was no different than the girls from my academy days. Every once in a while I would be challenged to a duel. It was always a mistake. For my opponent. One wrong move and Evangeline would find herself stunned. Or worse. It depended on how angry she made me before the spell fired off. I would never seriously harm her, but I knew spells that were as effective as a solid right hook. "I wasn't stealing, Holly, I swear." The cabinet was warded. That should be a pretty clear sign that you weren't welcome to help yourself. And don't even try to tell me you were just looking for cookies. You know full well that's where I keep my potion supplies from the day I let you sit in while I worked. That was my first mistake, obviously. The second was letting my guard down around you. I thought that maybe after you helped me find Katerina's body that we could be, I don't know, friends. Evangeline's eyes went wide and round, like a child trying to convince their mother they didn't sneak a chocolate bar before dinner. "Holly, I promise I wasn't going to take anything."
I don't believe you, I snapped, the words cracking through the air like a bolt of lightning. I suppose you also know where my missing love potion is? What were you going to do with that? Dose Adam, so he'd pay more attention to you and lose interest in me? It was an ugly accusation, but I didn't even flinch as it echoed back to me. Somehow, in the back of my mind, I'd known Evangeline was the thief. After all, she'd seen me make it and then asked a lot of questions about the effects during our hike. What? No. Of course not. I'm perfectly capable of lining up love interests of my own, thank you very much. She dropped the Bambi routine, and a slight snarl tugged at her upper lip. Oh, believe me, I've noticed. Quite the charming collection you've built up since you've moved in. What is your problem, Holly? You've been cold and mean to me since the day I arrived. What is it? Can't handle a little competition? You want to be the only witch in town? Yes, actually, that's exactly what it is. I don't appreciate you waltzing in and nearly blowing your cover, and the covers of everyone in the manor. You live in your own little bubble and pay no mind to the fact that you're endangering others. Not all of us have options. This is my home, not just a temporary crash pad for the summer. Evangeline paused, and something flashed in her eyes. Before she could fire off her next retort, the door opened, and Adam popped his head into the kitchen.
Everything okay in here? He asked tentatively.
He glanced at each of us, and then fully entered the room. She was in here stealing from me, I declared, leveling my stare back on Evangeline.
I wasn't stealing.
Then what were you doing? Evangeline's eyes flew from me to Adam, as though hoping he would take her side. Instead of backing her up, he came to stand beside me, in a silent move of solidarity, and crossed his arms.
What happened?
He asked. She licked her lips nervously.
I was looking for something.
To steal?
Adam said. Evangeline slammed her wand down onto the counter, and then planted her bald fists on her narrow waist.
To read, she countered. I was looking for Holly's potions book, the one I saw her using when she was working the other day.
Why? I demanded, only slightly lowering my hand that contained the charged pool of magic. Evangeline sighed and raked her hands through her long black tresses. She pressed her eyes closed, as though suddenly in some meditative trance. When she dropped her hands, her eyes popped back open again, and I noticed the surface coated in a glossy film. Was she about to cry? Adam dropped his arms, apparently noticing the same thing.
Evie? What's going on?
She shook her head.
I can't talk about it.
Tears slipped past her thick lashes, and she flicked them away before they could slide down her cheeks.
I won't go through your things again.
You won't get the chance, I said. I'm going to tell Posy what you did right now, and she'll send you flying out of here on whatever broomstick you flew in on. Adam grasped my hand, and the magic drained away.
Come on, Holly. Let's not drag Posy into this. You know how she'll react.
I glared at Evangeline for another long moment, my wheel spinning at a dizzying pace.
Fine.
But Evie, if you violate Holly's trust again, or any of ours for that matter, I'll call the SPA myself.
Adam's words warmed me, and a faint smile crossed my lips as I glanced up at the hard set of his jaw. He liked Evangeline, but when crossed, he would treat her just like any other threat. In the supernatural world, things escalated a lot faster than in the human world. Messing with forbidden magic or attempting to steal another super's spells or powers was against the law and punished harshly. Magic in the wrong hands could be a threat to the entire paranormal community. Evangeline nodded, sending another rush of tears down her cheeks. Without another word, she grabbed her wand and stumbled into a run as she made her way out the back door. When the door fell shut and latched, I sighed, and Adam raked a hand through his hair.
That was weird.
No kidding. I crossed over to the cabinet and took a quick mental inventory. It appeared that Evangeline had been telling the truth. As far as I could tell, nothing was missing.
My potions handbook was stored in a chest under my bed, a hiding place that no one in the house knew about. Not even Adam. A scratch sounded at the door. I shut the cupboard, sealed it with a new security ward, and tracked back to the door to let Boots come into the kitchen. His eyes were half-closed, as though he'd just roused from a deep sleep. I folded my arms and gave him a mock look of disgust. "And just where were you when Mama's stores were being raided?" He meowed and waddled over to his food cabinet. Adam barked a laugh and went to his own stash of snacks.
"A cat after my own heart there, Bootsy."
He paused, a dazed look on his face.
"Wow, never figured I'd say that."
I laughed and stooped to get Boots' bowl ready.
"Yeah, seems like that goes against the canine code of conduct, sympathizing with a cat."
Adam smiled and gave a shrug.
"Oh, well, I trust you'll keep my secret."
He gave me a wink and spun to assess his options, pulling the cabinets open as wide as they would go for fear of missing something delicious hidden in one of the corners.
"Just this once," I replied.
"You want a real dinner?" Adam perked and craned around to look at me, still squatting beside Boots, absently stroking his back as he chowed down.
"I'm listening."
I laughed and popped up to my feet. I nudged the cabinet closed, but didn't ward it. No one would want to steal Boots' revolting-smelling kibble or collection of tuna. "I'm starving."
"McNally's?"
I rolled my eyes.
"You know there are other places, right?"
"The bakery?"
he tried, his eyes wide and hopeful. "Something that's not covered in frosting."
"Well, then what's the point? If it's not deep-fried or slathered in either peanut butter or frosting, I'm not really interested."
I scoffed and opened the fridge.
"Yeah, right, Adam. I've known you long enough now to know that you'll eat just about anything. Spaghetti?"
I turned to gauge his reaction. He smirked at me and then gave a shrug.
"For the record, I'm resisting the urge to be difficult."
"The stars bless you," I muttered, retrieving a jar of marinara from the back of the fridge. Adam laughed and went to get a package of pasta from the pantry. I flicked a hand at the stove, and a fire sparked to life. I filled a pot with water from the copper faucet that snaked up the backsplash above the stove, and grabbed another pot to warm the sauce. While everything was cooking, Adam gave in to temptation and helped himself to a colossal scoop of peanut butter.
"Do you believe her story? That she was just looking for your handbook?"
he asked, before popping the spoon into his mouth. I leaned against the L-shaped counter and sighed. "I have no idea. It seems odd. I mean, it's a family heirloom and has at least a book's worth of notes and tips scrawled in the margins. But besides that, there's nothing there that she couldn't find out from other spellbooks. And she has about 1 million of them. I swear, every time I see her, she has a different book. I don't think she's fully reading them. I think she's scanning, like she's looking for something in particular." Adam nodded and swallowed his bite. No easy feat, considering the amount of spread he'd chomped into.
"Isn't there an easier way to look that stuff up?"
"What, like witchy Google?"
"Yeah, that'd be awesome."
I laughed and rolled my eyes.
"Nope. Believe it or not, we're old school when it comes to spellcrafting and potion making. Everything is still on paper."
"How very retro of you."
"It's easier to charm handbooks, scrolls, and collections of parchment to only reveal their true contents to other witches and wizards."
Adam nodded and dunked his spoon in for another bite. He paused, the heap of peanut butter hovering at his chin.
"You know, we still haven't taken that walk. What you got going on tonight?"
"I'm making spaghetti," I replied, grinning over at him.
"But after that, I'm available."
"Perfect."
He smiled, and my knees went wobbly at the stove. How could he still manage to make my heart flutter like that?
"In fact, besides the ghost girls, I think we'll have the place to ourselves. I doubt Evie's coming back anytime soon, and Lacey's on her way out with the undead parade."
The look in his eyes sent my heart racing at triple speed. Chapter 20
Holly, door's for you.
Lacey bellowed from the foyer, shattering the moment and interrupting Adam mid